Hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back at the Solartopia Green Pound and Wellness Show here at Progressive Radio Network. We're going to run through the hour. We got two great, great guests. This is not our Zoom call, our regular Zoom call on election protection. We got to get into back to our roots here in nuclear power. And we've got two truly pillars of the No Nukes movement with us. Paul Gunter. Paul, you're in Maryland somewhere, right? Or are you in D.C.?
Nuclear-free Tacoma Park.
All right. We got that, the People's Republic of Tacoma Park. And the great Kevin Camps, who has just once again become a criminal. Kevin, what was your hit job this time?
Well, I'm speaking to you from Washington, D.C., as Tom Goldtooth of Indigenous Environmental Network just put it. We are part of the People versus Fossil Fuels Week of Actions at the White House, and today was protesting against false solutions like nuclear power. So I'm guessing about 100 people got arrested today, and that makes it about 400 so far this week.
Well, what was your crime? Were you robbing a bank? What's the deal?
We were incommoding on the sidewalk in front of the White House. And because we have so overwhelmed the park police, they are catching and releasing. So I was caught and released. So I am a free bird. I'm over at Freedom Plaza, which is our base camp of operations.
Did they put a tag in your ear? So
not that I detected.
A little radio transmitter so they know when you swim upstream.
Right. I wondered what that little tag was. Yeah.
All right, so let's get down to it. We'll start with you, Kevin, and then we'll go to Paul. And we're going to be joined by Joel Siegel. We had a last-minute switch to Zoom, so he's probably trying to figure it out. And also, Ned Ford should be joining us from Southern Ohio. Kevin, what specifically is in the Biden legislation to bail out the ridiculous, failed, dangerous, and catastrophic nuclear power industry?
Well, I mean, I think a part of Biden's background has to be put out there, and that is that his power base, of course, has been Wilmington, Delaware for his 50-year political career, and right next to Wilmington, Delaware, about 15 miles away, is one of the biggest nuclear power plants in the country. It's Salem Hope Creek. It's in New Jersey on artificial islands, but it's in the Delaware Bay, essentially, and Biden and Carper and many a politico from Delaware know who butters their bread, and so they are pro-nuclear. And what's very ironic about that is that on the calculation of reactor accident consequences that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission tried to hide but didn't get away with it, some of the worst casualties in the country if there's a meltdown at a reactor are right there because the capital of the state of Delaware is so close by. So that's some of Biden's background. And you know, the good news, I guess you could say, is that with all the pressure of the anti-nuclear movement and now groups like Indigenous Environmental Network and Honor the Earth calling out nuclear as a false solution, the numbers are coming down to some extent. They're still way too high, $28.5 billion in the budget reconciliation bill, so-called Build Back Better, and then another $9 billion in the bipartisan infrastructure bill, so-called, for mostly old nukes, but there's some money in that latter bill for new nukes as well.
Oh, man. So what form does the money take? Is it a direct handout? Is it loans like Obama did? What are they doing with this money?
Most of that money there would be production tax credits for dangerously age-degraded reactors, so-called merchant plants. So some of the companies that would most benefit include the regular suspects, the usual suspects, Exelon of Chicago, First Energy of Akron, Ohio, NextEra of Florida and New England and Wisconsin. So these so-called merchant reactors are standing to make a killing. And something that really needs to be focused on is the fact that little to none of that money will be used for major repairs or replacements of safety significant system structures and components. The vast majority of that money will simply go to executive salaries and to shareholder returns.
That's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. Are there any major opponents to the to this handout?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in the Congress. Well, I guess we're still working on that. We do look to, you know, half-century-long champions like Ed Markey to do something. We're looking to people like Bernie Sanders, whose focus is great on trying to help low-income people in this country with basic social services. Well, you know, close to $40 billion can be transferred away from this filthy rich industry that's already gotten, you know, not hundreds of billions, but more like trillions of dollars in subsidies and bailouts from the American people in the past. And here they go again. They want $40 billion more this time around. That money could go to much better purposes, of course.
Unbelievable. Paul Gunter, also Beyond Nuclear, you want to comment on this?
Yeah, I think your listeners should, particularly the listeners with progressive legislators, you know, you need to call, because nobody has of the even of the Progressive Party has stepped up to call out nuclear power and funding, you know, through taxpayer money, you know, funneled through Congress through these production tax credits. None of them have put the Dear Colleague letter out there to stop what amounts to fraud. You know, there are CEOs in nuclear power stations around the country. Look at South Carolina, where SCANA, their you know, top CEO, is going to be doing 2 years in prison for wire fraud in the you know, fraudulent claims around this $9 billion hole in the ground. It's the summer nuclear power station construction project, and there, you know, that project was canceled because it bankrupted Westinghouse, and but it was all a fraud all along, you know, and so the same is happening in other states like Illinois, where the you know, the government is embroiled in bribery to get credit to nuclear power stations that are uneconomical and should be closed, and would close were it not for, again, what is apparent fraud.
It, more than apparent, it's obvious. I mean, it's unbelievable. We're hoping to be joined by Ned Ford. I'm emailing him now to tell us this insane situation in Ohio. But is nobody, Kevin or Paul, is nobody in the Congress picking this up and leading a charge to stop this? I mean, We're talking what total now, about $40 billion, right? Just pure cash handout to these idiots.
But it's, you know, it's an umbilical cord to the taxpayer for, you know, essentially perpetual bailouts. One bailout bill is not going to do it. It never has in the entire history of nuclear power. You know that, Harvey. You know, they started out, there wouldn't be one nuclear power station built in this country unless the federal government had provided limited liability on severe accidents, because they would just price any utility out of business. So this is just a perpetuation of the history of this industry.
It's unbelievable. Kevin, now that you're a free man, what do you want to say about this?
Yeah, I'm kind of transported back to the year 2003, just before Thanksgiving, just to add to what Paul said about progressive members of Congress. In this case, it was fiscal conservative, so-called, not always, but Sununu of New Hampshire, Republican conservative U.S. Senator in 2003, joined with Ron Wyden of Oregon, who's still in there, a liberal Democrat, And what they did was they blocked the Energy Policy Act of 2003 from going forward over the Nuclear Loan Guarantee Program because it was such an outrageous giveaway. Unfortunately, that ended a couple years later. It was passed into law. But we staved it off for a couple years through some unlikely bedfellows, and that was Sununu and Wyden. And we need to do that again. We need to call fiscal conservatives on their bluff and say this is supposedly, according to you, supposed to be a capitalist country, a free market economy. The nuclear power industry has never been a free market industry. They have been bailed out, like I said. It depends on which report you look at. Look at Union of Concerned Scientists in 2011, easily hundreds of billions of dollars over the past decades. But, you know, the nuclear power industry and the nuclear weapons industry overlap tremendously. And if you look at the atomic audit by Steve Schwartz back in 1996, that figure up to that point in mid-1990s dollars was $7.5 trillion spent on nuclear weapons. That's why I say it's more likely that the nuclear power industry in this country has benefited from trillions of dollars in subsidies and bailouts from the American people. And they're addicted to it. They always have been. And they're a powerful, economically and politically powerful industry, one of the most powerful in the country. And they swarm Capitol Hill and they swarm the executive branch on a daily basis to get their way.
Harvey, you're mute.
There we go. I muted myself to welcome Joel. Can you hear me now? Can you hear
yes.
me now?
Yes.
I always love yeah. have people, you know, when they're speaking, they say, can you hear me? If they can't hear you, what's the point? Anyway, you can hear me, right? Okay, so, you know, it's all this screaming and yelling and cinema and mansion. A nickel here, a dollar there, and they're not talking about these nuclear things. I mean, it just really angers me. Now, you guys were around in 2007 when we came in. There was a $50 billion loan package on the table, and we had a big grassroots movement, and we were joined in the Capitol by Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown, Graham Nash. John Hall was a congressman at the time, and we killed it. We killed the $50 billion package. And now you got the whole country in an uproar over this. And by the way, before I lose track, I want to say one thing. This really angers me. They're calling this a $3.5 trillion package, but it's a 10-year program. So it's actually $350 million a year, right? Or $350 billion, whatever it is. What is the military budget for the next 10 years? Why aren't they calling the military budget a $100 trillion package or whatever it is? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's $10 trillion. It's about, the military is about $1 trillion a year, right? More or less, give or yeah. take a few yeah. hundred billion. So here they're sticking people programs for human beings and the environment with a $3.5 trillion price tag when it's a 10-year program, but somehow the military budget is only $1 trillion when in fact it's $10 trillion if you're going to put it over 10 years. Anyway, small gripe there. So
Joel Siegel,
we need people in the Congress to rise up. We don't have, I don't see a single champion in the House or the Senate who's screaming and yelling about these nuclear subsidies, this handout. I mean, do you know anybody? Joel Siegel, you're the great veteran of the Congress. Who inside is going to kill this program?
Hey, Brother Harvey, how are you?
Good, Joel. How are you? Good to have you with us, Joel Siegel.
Yeah, I mean, the science of Congress, I worked there from 2000 to 2013 with the great late John Conyers, one of the greatest members of Congress that I ever had the pleasure to work for. There's really three steps to making changes in policy in the Congress. First, you got to have a coalition of conscience. Second, you got to go to the Progressive Caucus. That's where you're going to find your support. And there are a lot of members of Congress, whether it's, you know, Ro Khanna, would be someone who, Ted Lieu. There's many members of Congress. And then once they see there's a constituency to back them, if they go on the House floor for a speech or they send out a dear colleague, then they'll have the courage to do it. Let me tell you where the fear level is right now. The fear level regarding nuclear power is that, given the threat of climate change, we're going to need, even James Hansen has been saying this, right? Is that we're going to need to have nuclear power. And this, so that's one of the things that we have to deal with. Number two, we have to deal with making sure there's not an expansion of new nuclear power plants, because they're unbelievably expensive. They're very dangerous. Scientist Lester Brown says it can take 10 to 15 years for a plant to go online. And Professor Mark Jacobson out of Stanford is saying, let's make sure that, A, there's no fossil fuel subsidies, especially nuclear. I think we can do it, but we got to convince these members of Congress that you can go solar, you can go wind, you can do geothermal. You don't have to go nuclear, and that's the challenge.
Well, I will say that the New York Times yesterday had on the front page that Biden is opening up leasing for offshore wind farms. But if you look at it closely, they're not going to get the basic paperwork done until 2025. And, offshore wind will be great. These subsidies are just going to kill us. I will think in 2007, and Paul and Kevin, you were both there with this, Nancy Pelosi stepped up. Of course, you haven't lived until you walk through the halls of Congress with Bonnie Raitt. I got to tell you this one story. I spent the day with Bonnie walking around, and all these Congress people were like, kissing the ground she walked on. So we were sitting in the congressional cafeteria there with Diane DeGette and a couple other congresswomen. And I went to the restroom, and this Mississippi congressman followed me into the restroom. And he said, "Is that Bonnie Raitt?" And I said, "Yeah, that's Bonnie Raitt." And he said, "Can I meet her?" You got to remember, I'm standing there in the men's room. And I said, "Well, are you anti-nuclear?" And he turned around and walked right out of the restroom, man. That was the end of that conversation. So, but anyway, we beat that. Ed Markey, Barbara Boxer, Byron Dorgan, Harry Reid, they all stepped up. And they killed the $50 billion subsidy. Now, it was coming from Bush, so there was a partisan dimension there. And Pelosi had just become Speaker of the House. But, this time, who do we got? Who's going to kill this in the Congress?
Harvey,
I just want to
fill out the rest of that history in 2007. Yes, indeed. Earlier in the year, blocking the $50 billion was a huge victory. But what happened at the end of 2007, on December 23rd of 2007, when most of the country was busy with other things called the holidays, Congress did pass a $22.5 billion nuclear power loan guarantee program. And then in the years that followed that, we continued to fight against expansions. And in fact, in the American Recovery Act, when Obama came into office, again, we faced another $50 billion expansion. That would have taken it up to more like $75 billion. And we stopped it. And we kept fighting it for year after year after year. And we kept it at the 22.5 that they passed, in the dead of night during the holidays, which is when they do some of their worst nuclear legislation. They do it in the week between, Christmas and New Year's many times. And in this particular case, it was $22.5 billion. And just long story short, so far they've dispersed about $12 billion of that to the Vogtle Units 3 and 4 new construction project. That's where the money has gone, $12 billion. So that means there's another $10.5 billion sitting in a fund for nuclear power loan guarantees waiting to be dispersed. So we're going to have to be vigilant to try to prevent that.
And Joel, You have now, of course, we got to blame Obama. He put $8.3 billion into Votel, and then Bush, Trump came in with another $3.7 to get it up to 12, and Votel is a total catastrophe. They'll be lucky, well, we'll be unlucky if they even open the damn thing. And they're at close to $30 billion now. Isn't that right, Paul? I mean, it's $30 billion price tag on the last two reactors under construction.
Right. That's probably the bottom line. You know, there's, you know, the money trail is pretty obfuscated. But on the record, it's close to $30 billion now.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And Joel, you've just become the head of a national coalition for the homeless. How much good could we do with that money to alleviate the homeless problem?
You could basically end it.
Right. So they're going to build these nuclear units where you could take 60,000 people off the streets in L.A.
Let me give you a few numbers. So the defense budget used to be $780 billion per year, but then the CIA has a black budget, which is probably $30 to $40 billion. Then you got Homeland Security budget. So I think you're right. I'd say it's about $1 trillion. Here are some of the numbers on ending homelessness. If you cut out two battleships, they cost about $10 billion each, and you got $20 billion. That basically will provide housing for all the people who need it. We're about 7 million units short of housing. So this nuclear subsidy, which is absolutely ridiculous. In my opinion, the subsidy is given for one reason and one reason only, and that's to get campaign contributions. No one can tell me that whether it's Duke Energy, which is down the street from where I live, or these large power companies who make, literally, billions of dollars, why do they need a subsidy? Subsidize the people who don't have housing, don't have health care, don't have a job. People like in my family who can't live off their Social Security check. We need a revolution of values in this country where we're prioritizing we the people, not we the nuclear power industry. We'll have to go back old school, Harvey. We're going to have to find a Bonnie rate the way you did it back in the day and was so successful. We're going to have to replicate those strategies. I think Representative Jim McGovern in the House would be our best ally. I'm very close to him, and I'm very close to Senator Markey. I think that those are both possible allies. But when I used to bring celebrities to the Hill, I brought Bono to the Hill to work on global AIDS, and we got $15 billion a year in PEPFAR dollars to the Caribbean and Africa, so there wouldn't be a Holocaust of people dying because they didn't have the AIDS drugs. I brought in Mick Jagger's wife, Bianca Jagger, to work on toxic mold legislation, and the Republicans were flocking to her. So I saw the Bonnie Raitt effect, but you're going to have to go old school like you did it.
And Joe, that's a great offer to get those guys, Markey, particularly to get a Dear Colleague letter out.
Well, Markey.
Yes, I agree.
Markey knows the issue as well as any of us. I mean, Ed Markey represented the congressional district in northeastern Massachusetts that was right across the border from Seabrook. And he's been with us, Paul, as long as you and I have been there on Seabrook. So Ed Markey needs no education on the nuclear industry. And I seem to remember, maybe I'm wrong, but Biden lived right across the river from Hope Creek there, from the Salem nukes in New Jersey. And somewhere along the way, he made some really disparaging comments about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I think if we Google it, we might find them. So, but this has got to stop. I mean, I believe that the 93, I believe it's 93, right, Paul or Kevin? We have 93 reactors still going in this country, right?
Yeah, 93 still operating.
What is it, Kevin?
93 still operating.
Right. Although, you know, we don't know since the show started how many of them have blown up, but, you know.
Or closed. I mean, really, they're standing in line to close right now. That's what this bailout is all about, Harvey, is they need to keep uneconomical reactors going that are getting so old. Joel, you mentioned Duke, right? They're just down the street or next door or whatever. But, you know, one of the big, the idea of this bailout is to keep plants like Oconee going in South Carolina. Oconee is a great example. Just a quick snapshot. It sits below two dams, the Ocassee Dam and the Kiowee Dam. So when they licensed Oconee, it was the Atomic Energy Commission, which was the biggest promoter, not regulator, of safety. And it's clear, it's clearest when you look at Oconee, because here's Duke Energy. They build in the same project two dams, two hydroelectric dams, and three nuclear power stations on the same project, and the nukes don't even get an environmental qualification for what a severe accident would look like if one of those dams break. So Duke was licensed. These three nuclear power stations were licensed without qualifying safety in the event the site gets inundated. And the studies that have come out since show that they would be underwater 18 and a half feet if Ucassie broke. And Ucassie is a earth rock-filled dam. So it's very, very unlikely, but in the unprecedented time of climate change and, you know, precipitation going through the roof, if the Ucassie Dam is overtopped by flooding, you know, like a hurricane that parks over Ucassie for an extended time, and you could overtop that dam, and within an hour or two, the Ucassie Dam will fail, and that it will send a wall of water, the equivalent of six Mississippis, down the, you know, the southern slope of the Appalachian Mountains into and slam in to the Kiowee Dam, and the Oconee nuclear power stations are built right into the side of the Kiowee Dam, which uses, you know, hydroelectric power for emergency power backup. You know, Oconee was never built with emergency diesel generators. They're going to use the dam, but a single event, this is called single, common mode failure is what it's called. But a single event like a dam break at Ucassie will take out the emergency power and inundate the Oconee site under 18 feet of water, and it's assured they will melt that thing down just like an inland tsunami, like Fukushima. Three reactors blew up because of the same scenario, but in this case, it's not a tsunami, it's a dam break.
Unbelievable. Paul,
can I respond to that, Harvey? First of all, Paul, thank you for that professorial treatise, because I did not know this. If you study the work of Michael Mann, the preeminent scientist in the world on climate, Dire Predictions, I think probably the best book I've read on climate change, he's predicting that in the East Coast, it will be precipitation like we've never seen before, which is what you just articulated, because the climate is so hot and there's so much evaporation of water from rivers and lakes, it's accumulating in the clouds, and when it rains, it pours. Then there's what's called the stalling effect. That storms now, instead of crossing over an area of Mecklenburg County where I live, it stalls because the jet stream has been altered due to, you know, the heat of the earth. You're what you just said was the equivalent of putting a nuclear reactor on the San Andreas Fault.
Oh, exactly. Who would ever do such a thing?
Yeah, that would never happen in my lifetime. But right. You're really pointing out, Paul, something in law we call that the death knell argument, or in Congress we call it the poison pill.
Right.
That is the most devastating argument that I've ever heard about why we have to discontinue nuclear power in areas where there's concentrations of water. I've never heard anyone talk about it. I wish you would do an editorial, and I will try to get it into some of the North Carolina newspapers.
Right. Well, here's the deal. Let me just say real quick, we've got Duke by the tail. Because they want to extend the operating license of Oconee out to 2053 and 2054. And they've got to go through an NRC licensing process. And we just got standing in the, before an Atomic Safety and Licensing Board to bring Duke out to disclose these documents. And our witness is Jeff Mittman, who is the nuclear engineer at the NRC, who did the risk analysis on the impact of a dam break at Cassie on Oconee. So we're trying to get him before an Atomic Safety and Licensing Board to testify. That, you know, the most egregious part of this, Joel, is that Duke, and they colluded with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to hide the risk of the Ukiah-Cassie dam break and the inundation of the Oconee Nuclear Power Station. They hid it as safeguards information for more than a decade, so that those flood numbers were not public until two Freedom of Information Acts, one filed by Greenpeace, one filed by the Union of Concerned Scientists, that gave us the numbers. These are Duke numbers that a dam break will, and you know, it's to the point where the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 2011 said that Duke should build a wall, a 19-foot wall around the Oconee power block because of this. And you know, Duke never did it. I mean, they never did it.
Wild.
And so now they want to renew the Oconee Nuclear Power Station, you know, out a 60 to 80 year license extension. And they're not even following the NRC, you know, it all got buried as secret. And, you know, in fact, some of the NRC engineers that brought this to the public attention through media, they were threatened by what they said guns and badges of within the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Those are the people that came out to keep this public safety issue from going, you know, into a transparent window into what happens in climate change, even in the current license. You point out, you know, that even now, Ukiah-Cassie sits on this southern slope of the Appalachian Mountains that gets more rain, or the equivalent of rain, as northwestern United States up in Washington. So, you know, and as these things get worse, the risk goes up, and the Congress right now is looking for money to bail out Duke so that they don't have to pay to upgrade flood protection around the Oconee Nuclear Power Station.
Well, you know, I heard that Duke opened a surf shop right there at the dam, so that when people went with the damn brakes up here, write it down. Yeah. Kevin Camps, you want to jump in on
What's
that?
Up?
Well, I was going to jump back to that earlier discussion about homelessness, and now you bring up surfing. And what's coming to my mind is high-level radioactive waste, which is homeless. It has nowhere to go, at least not safely on the surface of the
Joel, is your homeless commission going to take on finding homes for nuclear waste as well as for
I'll start a new committee on that. Yes.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Kevin.
Well, then you've got San Onofre, which is prime surfing beach with high level radioactive waste parked 110 feet from the ocean. So
repeat that. That was 110 feet. High level nuclear waste.
And a half above
110
high tide,
feet.
So. In a tsunami zone. So at all of the 93 still operating and the 36 permanently closed atomic reactors in this country, you have most to all of the high-level radioactive waste they ever generated still on site that is also vulnerable to these nightmare scenarios like Paul was describing at Oconee. And I wanted to mention high-level radioactive waste because at the White House today, my sign was in honor of Grace Thorpe, the Sac and Fox woman, who's an emeritus member of the NIRS, Nuclear Information and Resource Service Board of Directors, founder of National Environmental Coalition of Native Americans. And she devoted the latter part of her life to not only stopping a high-level radioactive waste dump targeted at her reservation, Sac and Fox in Oklahoma, but dozens more across the country. She traveled for years on end educating Native communities, don't take this money. It's poison, you know, and she succeeded. All of those scores of proposals were stopped. And here we go again. Biden's energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, the former attorney general and governor of Michigan, just this year, a couple times now, has said, we need to reach out to Native American tribal governments with financial incentives packages to get them to consider hosting high-level radioactive waste on their reservation. So it's just craziness. And that's why I wanted to honor Grace Thorpe today at this, calling out of false promises and false solutions to the climate here at the White House. And, you know, it goes right to the administration, right to the energy secretary. You know, an inevitable byproduct of this industry is forever deadly, high-level radioactive waste that we don't know what to do with. And Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, her joke about it, you were mentioning Bonnie Raitt, and Bonnie Raitt and the Indigo Girls and REM and all these bands joined with Winona LaDuke on the Honor the Earth tours. And during the, you know, intermission between acts, Winona would get up there and educate the audience about the issues. And she said, the best minds in nuclear science have been hard at work for more than a half century to find an answer to this radioactive waste problem. And they finally got it. Haul it down a dirt road and dump it on an Indian reservation. So that's right. What we're looking at.
I want to call out Grace Thorpe. Grace Thorpe was the daughter of Jim Thorpe, probably the greatest American athlete ever. And I met her a number of times. And she traveled around with Jim Thorpe's Olympic medal and was instrumental in getting him reinstated. They had this whole racist campaign to take his Olympic medal away. She was a great woman, Grace Thorpe. I feel very honored to have met her. Joel, go ahead. Joel Siegel.
No, I was going to say I worked for Jennifer Granholm. I worked with her in an attempt to stop the Detroit Medical Center from closing its doors. It was a trauma one center. It was the only hospital in Detroit that really dealt with, you know, the underserved. I call them the oppressed, predominantly, Black majority of Detroit, but Granholm wanting to put nuclear waste on Indian reservations, to me, is so out of character for the person that I worked with for so many years. I'm stunned and I'm shocked. Do they want to put it in the casinos?
Yeah. Well, they won't have to pay electricity to light them up. You know, they just glow in the dark.
But I mean, I think Native Americans have suffered enough. You know, we stole their land. We've impoverished them. Now all they need is, radioactive waste leaking in, to the water table. And you've just articulated why we can't use nuclear. It's because we don't know where to store the waste.
Yeah, you know? That seems to be a universal. I followed the comments in the Times about the wind energy proposals, and there's, as always, there's nuclear discussion, and it's insane. I do want to say, Paul and Kevin, you guys know this very well, Oconee is not the only nuclear plant downriver from dams that could break, right? I mean, we're looking at inland tsunamis here. How many are there?
The NRC has identified 18 units below major dams, you know, like Columbia Nuclear Power Station up in Washington sits below the a huge hydro dam, and you know, and there's sinkholes around that particular facility as well. So, but you know, it again, the it comes down to this, guys. You know, we're dealing with a criminal element. The you know, that's the problem. And you know, the criminal element that has been in you know, politics for a long time. I don't know, you know, I don't ever remember a time, but you know, there's a tug of war right now that we've got to win. And it means that we need to restore integrity. You know, this is the particularly with the Oconee situation. I will say that, you know, our expert witness is he's a retired NRC regulator, but he demonstrates that there are in regulation and in government, there are voices of integrity and that are conscientious about things like liberty. Things about transparency and putting public interest over financial profit margins, and this is the tug of war that you know, is playing out right now in Congress, in which way they're going to swing for you know, the coffers of our future and the hazards that we face.
Right, and Kevin. Speaking of integrity, I'm actually talking now from Columbus, Ohio, the scene of the crime of the astonishing $61 million bribe that the utilities in the North paid Larry Householder, the Speaker of the Ohio House, to get subsidies for the two reactors on the lake. What's the latest on that? You almost went to jail today. Were you going to be seeing Larry Householder in prison, or what's the deal?
You know, what's amazing about Ohio is nobody's really been held to account yet. I mean, it's my understanding that the nuclear bailout aspect of House Bill 6 has been repealed after, you know, way too long after the scandal became known. But the coal bailout is still in place, and that could be hundreds of millions of dollars over time for these, you know, ancient coal plants, which happen to be the same ones used to electrify the uranium enrichment facilities in Paducah, Kentucky, and Portsmouth, Ohio. So that's a whole nother story. But there was one of the accused. There were about five people charged in the bribery scandal. One of them, the official version is, committed suicide. It was a suspicious death, but one of them died. The other four, what it looks like, just like in Illinois, is the company, First Energy, who gave the bribe, is probably going to be paying $200 or $300 million to the Department of Justice, and we'll call it even. And whether anybody goes to jail or not, I mean, Householder at least lost his House speakership, but I believe he's still in the House. He's not in jail. And over in Illinois, the House Speaker lost his power as well, but these people should be going to jail. These are crimes. These are high crimes. The U.S. attorney who announced the scandal in July of 2020 said this was the biggest bribery and racketeering scandal in Ohio history. And so how come nobody's going to jail? I mean, you know, it's a cost of doing business for these mega corporations. They'll pay a couple hundred million and then try it again in a couple more years.
It's really sick. And those two reactors on the lake, man, they are absolutely terrifying. I have to say that there is nothing that terrifies me more in the American political scene than the continued operation of these 93 reactors. I mean, any one of them could be blowing up as we speak. I do want to recommend and all you listeners out there, if you really want to get a grip on the realities of nuclear power, you need to see the HBO series on Chernobyl. It is the most devastating thing, I say this advisedly, it's the most devastating thing I've ever seen on television. It is I think it's 5 or 6 parts. I think it goes a total of 8 or 9 hours. And I made the mistake of watching it over 3 days. The way to watch the Chernobyl series, and everybody who has any interest at all in nuclear power needs to see that series. I mean, it's devastatingly accurate and extremely well done, and the most disturbing thing I've ever seen on television. So the way to do it is don't watch it alone. Get it with a friend or two. Start around 11 in the morning and watch it straight through, because you really have to experience. I am not bothered by stuff. You know, as a journalist covering these issues, you have to have a pretty thick skin, but I actually couldn't sleep 2 nights that I watched this thing. So get this, I'm pretty sure it's on HBO. Get the Chernobyl series, start, 10, 11 in the morning. You can take breaks, but watch it through a single day. And because you will come to understand how bad the nuclear industry is. I mean, it's the Soviet Union, but the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the only way to describe the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is that it's a Soviet agency. I mean, they operate exactly the way the regulatory commissions operated in the Soviet Union during Chernobyl. And Chernobyl is definitely what brought down the Soviet Union. I mean, that's what Gorbachev said, and you can see how it happened. So watch that thing and really take it advisedly, because they did do a composite on one character, a woman who was played by Emily Watson, who was absolutely devastating. She was great. She beautifully acted the whole thing. But by and large, it's really accurate and absolutely worth watching. The thing that scares me the most at this point in time is embrittlement. All these reactors except Watsbar are at least 30 years old. Watsbar is technically really 30 or 40 years old, but it didn't open until much later. But all the other 93 reactors, I don't think anybody's under 30. And they're all totally embrittled inside. I mean, there needs to be a national commission on embrittlement just to look at these old reactors. But even now, we get no, you guys, Paul and Kevin, you guys go and you argue in front of the NRC. I've got to ask you a personal question. Do you think these guys have been lobotomized? They never budge an inch, these people.
Yeah, Harvey, I really, there is a tug of war. Clearly there's always been a bias. The Atomic Energy Commission got busted for it, where, regulation superseded their obligation to the safety mandate. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission took over, but NRC turns out to stand for nuclear regulatory capture by the very same industry. And by the way, that industry is inextricably the combination of nuclear weapons and nuclear power. They don't operate independent of each other. And that's the crux of the matter right now. Joel.
Yeah, one of the things that you both have brought out to me is how much elected officials, the press, progressives do not understand the dangers of nuclear power. And Paul, you have such an incredible grasp on this issue, and as do you, Harvey, and your other esteemed colleague.
Kevin.
It's Kevin?
Yeah.
Kevin, I think we really need to do national teach-ins at universities, congressional briefings, because they're the more and more I read about, you know, books about climate change, there are so many academics and so-called experts are saying we have to go nuclear power. Like, we don't have a choice. That is a true lobotomy. If you, you know, and as Paul Krugman would say, intellectual confusion, when we know that scientist after scientist, engineer after engineer, expert after expert, including you, Harvey, is saying solartopia, solar, wind, geothermal, if possible, with battery storage. Why then is this, I'm gonna ask Paul this question, why are they still advocating for nuclear power? It's dangerous, it's expensive. It you know, when you can have clean renewable energy that is safe, you know, a windmill, it will not blow up, and the solar panel will not blow up. So what where's the disconnect here with the so-called experts?
Yeah, Paul and then Kevin, and we're actually close to being out of time. You guys are really great.
Let me just say real quick that, you know, the academic reports coming out now are, and, you know, admissions by nations like the United Kingdom, is that nuclear power and nuclear weapons, the military and the civilian, are the same supply line. It's the same education pool. And they don't operate separately from each other. It is, you know, this trafficking of nuclear materials that take the form of nuclear fuel, nuclear bombs, and nuclear waste. You know, the mafia is key in moving nuclear waste around. That's my big concern. That, you know, again, that all three of these areas are, again, they're involved in criminal activity, in from fraud to criminal negligence. And that, you know, that is, therein lies our struggle, because the, you know, this is an industry of lawlessness. Seriously. They've never had the right to make nuclear waste for which there is no plan for its management and our and protection of our resources. They never did that, and they still haven't.
Thank you, Paul. Kevin Camps.
I was gonna quote Peter Bradford of Union of Concerned Scientists Board of Directors on trying to solve the climate problem with nuclear. He points out that, you know, you don't turn to caviar to try to solve the global hunger problem. Nuclear is too expensive. It takes too long. It's a non-starter. But besides that, we've talked about some of the problems: weapons proliferation, the dilemma of what to do with high-level radioactive waste, the front-end impacts on indigenous peoples when uranium is mined and milled. The list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, what kills me is that nobody ever points out how much heat a nuclear reactor creates. You know, it's 570 degrees Fahrenheit in the core of a nuclear reactor. These people run around pushing thorium. Thorium is 1115, and fusion is 100 million degrees. So here we are. We're gonna solve the heating of the planet with a fire that burns at 570 or 1115 or 100 million degrees Fahrenheit. These people are completely out to lunch. And the same thing with carbon tax. I mean, I have friends who really want a carbon tax. You can't have a carbon tax unless you also have a heat tax and a radiation tax.
And a water tax.
And a water tax. That's another thing people never talk about with nukes, is the water situation. We are almost out of time. Kevin, I'll give you a quick last word, and then Paul and Joel.
We're fighting dumps in Texas and New Mexico as we speak. So folks need to jump into these fights. We need help.
Well, now that the Taliban has taken over Texas, I'm not sure they're really going to stand for nuclear waste. Paul?
You know, you can follow Google News on Oconee Nuclear Power Station and Duke Energy and Beyond Nuclear.
Yeah, that's good. And I got to thank you two guys, Kevin and Paul. You've been on the case forever. Paul and I, we were arrested at Seabrook together in 1989. you must have been just a teenager at the time, but you know. And Kevin,
we choose our outlaws carefully.
Yeah, and you know, we have had tremendous success in this movement. In 1974, we were just getting going. Nixon said there'd be 1,000 nukes in the year 2000, and in the year 2000 there were 104. We're down to 93, but that's, you know, we got to get these reactors shut. And Joel, you being the veteran of the Hill here, we got to get these subsidies out of this. It's amazing that nobody is paying attention to it, but they're yelling and screaming over every nickel and dime in this thing. And here they are handing another 40, 50 billion to this nuclear industry. Give us a word here.
Well, I mean, I'm organizing a press conference with the National Coalition for the Homeless next week, and I'll be flying to D.C. I'll be speaking on the need not to cut $300 billion out of affordable housing from the budget, from this soft infrastructure bill. Perhaps what I can do is say, why don't we shift that $70 billion and the subsidy to the nuclear energy, which is what I am going to say since I've been on the show, and use that for affordable housing for people stuck in homeless shelters in a COVID-19 pandemic and 11 million about to be evicted from their homes. Let's use that subsidy for housing, not for nuclear power. I am going to say that because of your help.
That's a great thing, a great connection. You should invite Kevin and Paul to that press conference. Ask them if they want to resettle people in abandoned nuclear power reactors with those domes there. So thank you so much. You guys have been great. Kevin Camps, I'm glad you were not in jail. Paul Gunter, you're always a brilliant genius on this. Both of you guys, Joel Siegel, this is a good connection to make. This has been, thank you, the crew in New York. Much appreciated. This has been the Green Power and Wellness Show on the Progressive Radio Network. I have been Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. Next week, we'll be back with our 68th Zoom call on election protection, the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week. And no nukes.